WAYL St. Augustine, WATY Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Crews are using aircraft to try and control a raging forest fire south of Los Angeles. There's no containment today. The blaze churning through the Cleveland National Forest. Aircraft have been dropping retardant across ridgelines to try to keep the fire from racing down hillsides toward residential communities. Flames erupted on Monday, and they've scorched more than 6 square miles of dry brush and timber so far. Voting is underway in an Ohio special election that may provide clues as to whether Democrats will retake the U.S. House in November. Democrat Danny O'Connor, the Franklin County recorder, is running for an open congressional seat in central Ohio against Republican Troy Balderson, a two-term state senator. Both candidates made last-minute stops around the sprawling central Ohio district. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 154 points, about a half an hour away now from the closing bell. The NASDAQ is up by close to 30. This is SRN News.
There's an accident causing some minor delays on I-95 on the southbound ramp from Airport Road on the north side. Also, an accident still in the clearing stages on the west beltway, 295 northbound at the exit at Wilson Boulevard. And there's a disabled vehicle in St. Johns County on I-95 southbound just beyond the International Golf Parkway. Plenty of sun this afternoon, becoming partly cloudy tonight, low 75. Wednesday, mostly sunny, high 94.
Welcome to the Inspiration 316 show hosted by John Beener, founder of Wise Counsel. John shares the inspiring and shocking miracles of how Jesus Christ is changing lives, families, organizations, and nations in this chaotic world. These are the true stories the media won't cover because they defy the shocking bad news they are selling. Stay tuned to be inspired.
Well, good day. It's John Beener. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Inspiration 316. Hey, we're all about the good news of Jesus Christ, everyday miracles happening in people's lives, even when they don't know them. Is it possible God can use someone who hasn't given their life to Him? Is it possible? Has He used you before you gave your life to Him? He did me anyway. And He opened doors. He sent me a beautiful wife. I heard the Holy Spirit speak to me about that when I first saw her, and I didn't even know the Holy Spirit could be very active in my life. I thought that was a church thing. My mom and dad didn't tell me the truth. They didn't know any better. God bless them. They're still great people, great character. Today's show is about business by the Spirit. You know, God is involved in business just like He is in ministry, just like He is in individual lives, just like He is with the poor, with the rich. You know, it doesn't matter. He's involved, again, with everybody's life. So today we got short little clips on some outstanding people. We've got David Green, who's the founder of Hobby Lobby, phenomenal business that's they're in the billions now, right now, and they've started the Bible Institute there in Washington, D.C., Museum of the Bible, they call it. But that's phenomenal. Five stories in Washington, D.C., right downtown. Stu Epperson started in a small little town in North Carolina, a radio station. Anyway, it has over 150 stations, one of the top mega media people in the United States. And then we got a guy named Steve Jobs, who started not only Apple several other businesses. But, of course, here's an interview we had with Japanese public television. There's next Donnie Smith, who is the CEO of Tyson's Foods. Then we've got Jack May, who's the founder of Alibaba, which is a Chinese business that's larger than Amazon, believe it or not, in China with, a billion and a half people there. And then we've got Doug McMillon, who is the CEO of Walmart, going to share some of his faith and testimony. And then Truett Cathy and his son, Dan Cathy. So we got a lot to cover here. We got to get started. Let's hear from... This is David Green talking about how he started Hobby Lobby, and then his sons are chiming in, then employees are chiming in about the company, what they do and stand for from a biblical point of view. Listen in.
In my junior and senior year in high school, I took a course called distributive education. Because of that, I was able to get out of school by about 11:30 and go down to the local five and dime store and work during my junior and senior years. And I found myself loving the work and loving retail, and I took to it. I said, you know, this is something I think I could do. I don't know that my mother and father, being ministers, really understood that we all have a calling on our lives. And as a result of that, after I got into retail, I really felt like I was a second-class citizen and a second-class Christian. And it took me some time to learn that, you know, God had a purpose for my life as well as any of my brothers and sisters, which all five went into the traditional pastor, pastor's wife, evangelist. During a time when I was actually a store manager at a variety chain, I decided to start manufacturing something just to go in business for myself. And so we started manufacturing really small miniature frames in our garage, and that's how we got started in business for ourselves. And from that manufacturing, we used the profits to open up our first store, 300 square feet, which is about the size of a living room. And then after that, we made enough profit to take it to 1,000 square feet, which was a big move, we thought, at the time. But over the years, God has blessed us, and we have continued to add stores. And we're at the point this year where our sales are going to be $2.5 billion, and God has blessed us to be a very profitable company. Every day there's decisions around here that has to do with, is this what Christ would have us to do? And so we try to ask those questions. There's many times that God tests us in terms of dollars and cents. Like when he was dealing with us on opening on Sunday, we said, you know, this is what God would have us to do. At that time, we were doing $100 million on Sunday. Not that we've always made the right decisions, but hopefully that we are very sensitive to finding out what Christ would have us to do in our business.
We don't set our Christianity on the shelf when we come to work. It is a part of our work. I think it should have an influence on every decision because as a Christian, that means that we are following Christ. That means that every decision that we make should be guided and directed by Christ that lives within us.
It's a unique company to work for with such core Christian principles that dictate so much of what we do here, that really kind of says it's not just about words, it's not just here's what we say, it's let us show you how we live.
The employees really feel the love that the Green family has for them. They support a lot of ministries that invest in their lives. We're just grateful to be able to see not only the lives that it's touching here, but they take this information home and it's making a big impact in their family as well.
I feel like the Lord has put these 20,000 employees in our charge, and he spoke to me about that at one time, and I thought at the time it meant only their spiritual. And as a result of that, we've hired three chaplains. But, when I gave it more thought, I think he also meant in terms of their financial needs. And so we felt like that we needed to do all we could do, step up above what's required of us. What is required of us is $7.25 an hour minimum wage. But the last couple of years, we have raised the minimum wage to our full-time employees. Now is at $12. And in addition to that, we try to give them reasonable hours. That's why we're only open 66 hours a week. And because we have taken care of our employees, they have taken care of us. It has been a good relationship.
I walked into one of our break rooms recently. One of the housekeepers was standing there. So I called her by name. I said, how are you this morning? She said, I'm just wonderful. She said, I clean restrooms and I clean floors to help David Green get the gospel spread worldwide. It doesn't matter who fills what position out here. There's that heart to please God in everything that is said and done. And that attitude comes from the Green family.
This business has been blessed by God. He has given the family, the skills and the ability, the opportunity, the time, the ideas, all of these have come in one way or the other from God. And so for us to lay claim to any of that would be wrong on our part. That helps us have the right perspective and understanding and not feel like that it's ours to do whatever we want to with.
So we legally have a document that says if this company is sold, 90% of it would have to go to various ministries, and the other 10 would go towards maybe the health, maybe education, things of that nature for our great-great-grandchildren. We do not own this company, but we're the stewards. God has given us the responsibility to be good stewards, and that we want to do.
Isn't that a powerful statement? Good stewards. God calls us to be servant leaders, good stewards, you know, not to be hung up on the money, but to use the money wisely to help others grow and to mature. And wow, that's the purpose of a business, really, is to help people. It's to serve a customer, supplier, vendors, employees. Everybody served together. God has a purpose for that. It's really the golden rule. That's what JCPenney's first stores were called, the golden rule stores. Stu Epperson founded a phenomenal company called Salem Enterprise, and actually they're in the radio business, 150 stations that they're involved with around the country. Phenomenal success. Stu Epperson and his brother-in-law really founded the company. There's a short story that Stu shared with us at a boot camp meeting we had a few years ago, and he was talking about how in his early days he got caught up, and his real passion was to be moonshine. This is in North Carolina in the backwoods. But listen to him, how it evolved into, eventually got into radio and such. Listen in.
I got involved, and I had a 1940 Ford, which had cost $90, and that had a huge trunk in it. So they spent about $10. This is how the economics of that worked. They spent about $10 on sugar and cornmeal, and they would go through this process and make about 50 gallons of corn liquor, moonshine. They called it moonshine because you had to go out at night to deliver it. And so we would fill that 1944. The trunk was about as half as big as the car, the little coupe, 1944, to take off at about midnight and go to all the distributors around the mountain there. And he sold half a gallon of moonshine liquor for $5. And don't get excited, that's no longer available. The price has gone up considerably. Anyway. This was entrepreneurship, and he was, you know, he had a big wad of money, and he carried it around in his pocket, and it stuck out like this. He carried it in a front pocket, and it was a roll of money, and he'd pull that thing out, and he'd pay people like this. He would, he was just proud of that. That was the biggest benefit of the whole thing. He was the guy in the country that had money, and nobody else had very much at all. And anyway, that, by the way, this is where NASCAR started. The Moonshiners, they invited him down on Sunday afternoon, Saturday afternoon. Junior Johnson, you heard those guys. And you've seen the movie Thunder Road, some of you who are a little older. And that's where it all started. Fireball Roberts, a lot of those guys got it going that way. And so anyway, I got involved in that, and I just felt, you know, this is what I was meant to do. I had a rush. If you're an entrepreneur and you've had some success, okay, you've had the moment, you've experienced the moment, you know the feeling, right? Now, it may not last long. Thankfully, mine didn't last long. But yes, this is what, not what God wanted me to do, but what I need to do in life. Anyway, at the end of that summer, my relative went off to the state penitentiary because he got caught. And I went off to Bob Jones University. And by a set of circumstances that I can't even understand to this day, and we still argue about who had the most confinement. But turned out to be a great school for me because I studied broadcasting, which is what I wanted to do. I got into radio, and I... started studying it, got a degree in it, and then got a master's degree on how to build a radio station. And that was the beginning of our company, which is now a public company. And I met my wife there at Bob Jones, and we've been married 50 years this past May 29th. 50 years. I know it's hard for you to realize I've been married 50 years, but you know. Anyway, I'm a 95% vegan, okay? That's one of the... Well, not one of the secrets. I actually look old and feel old, but it keeps you going. And I go to my doctor, and I get all kinds of shots, okay, all natural, all the time. So anyway, I just wanted to share a little bit of that with you. I got into radio, and I started out in Roanoke, Virginia, actually building a radio station, which was a graduate school project, and I fell in love with it. When my brother came back from serving in the U.S. Naval Labs in Washington, I built a little radio station in our farmhouse in 1944, 2 years after we got electricity. We had a radio station in our house. It was illegal, but it was a radio station. And so then he built a station in Mount Airy, and I worked there as much as I could, and I spent a whole life studying how to make radio work, particularly Christian radio. That's really what I wanted to do after I went to Bob Jones and got things in a good perspective with God. And so it just kind of evolved over the years. I started out in Roanoke, Virginia, having to build one. And by the way, if you're starting a business, it's good to start out on the ground floor. Start small, get the business plan down, figure out how it makes it work, and if you have a lot of options, by options I mean you can walk away from it, you can go do something else, or you feel like you should do something else, then you will not make it work. You have to have no option but to make it work. It's like, I believe it was Cortez who burned the ships, and they started over land, and they didn't have much of a chance of winning, but they won. That was their only option.
That is a powerful statement. No option to make it work. Boy, that's good advice for a small business, a ministry. You know, go for it. God has a purpose for you. If you feel it in your heart, if you really direct it in that way. Now, can God use a guy like Steve Jobs, you know, to be in business? Yes, if you look back and see his heritage, you hear his testimony and story. Did he ever know Christ in a personal way? Did he represent Christ? Did he witness for Christ? No, he didn't. But he did with his actions in many ways. You know, did he treat employees bad sometimes? He probably did. Did he do stupid things? Yes, he did. Is anybody else out there that's done some of those things like me too? You know what I mean? But anyway, here's it. Why start a business? He's asking this interview with a Japanese lady on public television. This is back in 2001. And focus on the key things. Allow people to fail. These are some of the things that is discussed in this interview, but I like it because it reflects biblical principles in action. You don't have to be a born-again, spirit-filled Christian to be successful in business because God has a purpose for grace, and he uses all kinds of people. Listen into some of this interview.
Sometimes people come to me and say, I want to start a company. And I say, why? They say, oh, I want to make lots of money. I say, forget it. That's not a good enough reason. You will not, most likely you will not succeed. Most people that have started companies because they want to make lots of money, I haven't seen very many of those succeed. Mm-hmm. The ones that succeed are people that come, sometimes they don't even want to start a company, they just have an idea that they want to get out, express out into the world. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they have to start a company because nobody else will listen to them.
Mm-hmm. You know, think different is easy to say. I mean, it's just two words. It's easy to say, but much harder to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's a company of 10,000 people. Yeah. How do you permeate the message throughout all the employees? What do you say to them?
Well, you permeate it by example, ultimately. And in other words, when something's not quite good enough, do you stop and make it better, or do you just ship it? Mm. You know, and everybody watches when you to see how the senior management makes those decisions. And what we've tried to do is stop and make it great before we ship it. When we have problems, stop and fix them. And by example, you can say anything you want, but everybody watches very carefully when you're in a difficult situation, mm-hmm. what decisions you make, values you have.
I mean, there are so many Japanese companies who are now trying to rejuvenate themselves, trying to instill a sense of sort of a venture spirit in their companies. And they would like to know how you do it. And you know, it's probably not easy to do.
Yeah, you know, we try to hire really smart people, but we have a very simple organization, mm-hmm. and we try to focus and do very few things well. And focusing's hard because focusing doesn't mean saying yes, it means saying no. So we decide not to do a lot of things so we can focus on a few handfuls of things and do them well. And I think you know, everybody working at a company wants to do something great. Mm-hmm. They want to be excited about what they're working on, mm-hmm. and they want to be recognized for it if they do a really great job. So we just try to allow people to do the best work of their lives mm-hmm. at Apple and get it out to 25 million customers that we have. Mm-hmm. And that's very exciting. And when you're working on something, and you know, if this works out, up to 25 million people are going to use this. It's very motivating.
Mm.
You know? And it's not just 25 million of our customers, but other companies tend to follow us. You know, it takes them a few years, but other companies tend to copy what we do if it works.
Right.
And so we can influence the whole industry.
Mm. Because the environment of personal computers is becoming very, very, I'd say, negative. Mm-hmm. The personal computer market is not so vibrant. Mm-hmm. It used to be the engine for the American growth. What is your perception as a entrepreneur for the prospect?
I don't see it quite the same way, but that's okay because Apple's in a great spot. Apple, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, was a little fragile. Mm-hmm. But in the last 3 or 4 years, everyone at Apple's worked so hard, and we've got such great customers that we've sold a lot of computers.
But some people say that we're now entering a post-PC era, mm-hmm. that the personal computer age is behind us,
right.
and there are many, many portable net applications that
sure.
are available. Why do you think the PC can be the center?
Well, because let me give you... See, we've been focusing on the Internet for the last 6, 7 years, and that's been appropriate. But the Internet is just one of the things we can do with a computer. And let me give you an example. The Internet, I love the Internet, but the Internet has no emotion to it. Mm-hmm. The Internet's very...
It's an information
It's just information. It's very intellectual. And the bandwidth isn't there to deliver emotion. To deliver emotion, you have to have higher bandwidth. And so most people don't have Internet connections mm-hmm. that are high enough bandwidth. Most content is not created for the Internet to be emotional. And we see at Apple, one of the things we've always felt is that we want to stand at the intersection of technology and humanities.
Mm.
We want to bring the humanist element into these tools and not have them just serve our intellectual side, but have them serve some other sides of us as well. And so that's I think, what we do particularly well.
Mm. Why do you think you need to put emotion into it now, though?
There's a lot of forces in life that tend to funnel us down into this institutionalized path.
Mm.
And where people, you know, where people sometimes forget that... that they're very unique.
That's a great question. Why emotion? And that's because the Spirit of God's in the midst of emotion. He's in the will, the soul. That's where he interacts with people. And so you can see there's a Spirit of God that's worked through Steve Jobs, innovative, creative, you know, intellectual, don't quit kind of attitude, hard worker. Let's go to a story here with Donnie Smith. This is the guy who's the CEO of Tyson Food, actually retired from CEO of Tyson's Food, but phenomenal. Listen to his story as a dedicated Christian. Listen to what he says.
I want to shift gears a little bit from those general questions to more questions about our seven pillars of faith at work. And the first one is on excellence. So we heard Donnie talk a little bit this morning about, you know, that God's a worker. We're made in his image. We're created to work. We've talked about Colossians 3:23. Working with all of our heart as working for the Lord, not for men. And I personally, that's my favorite verse, but that working with all your heart is pretty powerful in terms of how we should do our work. Donnie, I'm going to start with you. What's your opinion as you think about all these people, and it's not necessarily for you as an individual, but guidance for them. I'm a believer. I'm a Christian. I want to live my faith at work. I need to do my work with excellence. What does that look like?
Yeah, so I think excellence really ends up being the currency of the marketplace, right? And biblically, I can't think of one biblical character where God ever said, go be average, right? Or just here's what I want, you know, I don't need you to get them all the way to the promised land if you could just inch them forward a little bit. I mean, God's about big stuff that takes big faith. And I don't think he's, there's a verse in Revelations where he talks about, I think, mediocrity, lukewarm, and he kind of makes him want to puke, right? So that becomes my view of how God views mediocrity in the life of a Christian, right? Paul, he said, look, we're to run to win, not to place, not to show, we're to run to win. And so I think as leaders, we in every position, we get a platform. We get something to step onto, which is generally the quality and the excellence of our work to speak out of. And as Christians, I think we should run home and get on our knees and cry out to God if our attitude is only to give our jobs partial effort or just enough to go along to get along, just get by. I think we should cry out to God in repentance for that kind of attitude.
What if you, just follow up question, Donnie, what if you don't like your job?
Max Lucado wrote a great book called The Cure for the Common Life. And what he talks about is if you can find the place where what you're good at intersects with what you like to do, that becomes your sweet spot, right? And that's what you should strive to find because that's what's really going to fulfill you. Now, sometimes I will admit that what you're good at and what you like to do, there's an intersection of opportunity when God says, puts us in the waiting room and says, are you willing to wait on me a little while? So the first thing I'd ask is, are you in the waiting room? But the second thing I'd say is, look, if you just hate your job, get another one. We created 200 and something thousand? 271,000 jobs. There's opportunity out there for somebody. And if we'll adopt that principle of excellence, I think you got a great chance of getting hired. Life is too short to be miserable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And also the fact that we're doing it for God and not for man. And I know that's hard when you don't really like your work, but that is the calling that we have.
Again, that's Donnie Smith, the former CEO of Tyson Foods out there in Arkansas. Incredible company. God is talking through us, in us, whether we know him or not, business by the Spirit of God. This is what God is doing, moving the world forward. He needs jobs for people. He'll use even an atheist to employ people if he has to. But the best companies, hopefully, are the Christian ones where we have the Spirit of God in us and we know when God's talking to us or communicating or giving his visions and unctions. Even if we don't, we can be successful because of the grace that he puts on us. He needs us to move the world forward and employ people and provide opportunities for people to grow as individuals, to become leaders in their own family, if nothing else. Mary, Did You Know is the name of this song with Penix. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back here shortly.
Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that...
In Clay County, there's an accident on busy Blanding Boulevard southbound at Fox Ridge Road. It's still blocking the left lane. You'll probably slow down because of that. Also, a disabled vehicle on the East Beltway 295 southbound on the ramp to Heckscher Drive. And congestion on the East Beltway 295 northbound and southbound around Bay Meadows Road. Plenty of sun this afternoon, becoming partly cloudy tonight, low 75. Wednesday, mostly sunny, high 94.
Your baby boy would one day walk on water. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save save our sons and daughters. Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that you delivered will soon deliver you.
Welcome back. This is John Beaner with Inspiration 316. Today we're talking about business by the Spirit. Hey, you don't want to miss the boot camp meeting coming up September 6th. Jeff Rudd, Hope International founder, microloans, Christian-centered microloans in 19 countries, $570 million loaned out to 8 million small businesses. Hey, he's trying to double and triple that, and we got a part in that. We've got Phil Driscoll, probably the best trumpet player who's ever lived. Incredible testimony, incredible inspiration to all of us. And then we've got Rivers Pierce, one of the top Boomtown software internet company for real estate developers. One of the sharpest guys in the whole industry of internet development. And then we've got Judith McNutt, the co-founder of Christian Healing Ministry. She's phenomenal. She and her husband started this almost 30 years ago. Phenomenal work. I've been in their courses. Touch me, change me, molding me already. Okay. Again, September the 6th, email me at john@inspiration316 or john@askwisecounsel.com. Call us, write us, say hello to us, call the station, whatever you want to do. But September 6th, get your reservation in. Bring a table of five for $125. It's only $35 a person, but it'd be less, obviously, if you bring a table of five. Love to have you there. Anybody in business or ministry, and that means all of us, okay, are eligible to come. So we're going to have hundreds of little mini testimonies as well. So you're going to meet a lot of great people. So come to that. And so we're talking again about business by the Spirit. God is moving in people's hearts, whether they know him or not. You know, he's using business as a tool to connect people. It's a community. It's a family. You know, it's a service facility. You know, servant leadership, stewardship is all involved in this. Jack Ma is the founder of Alibaba, which is actually larger than Amazon, based out of China. They got a lot more customers there, with 1.2 million people in China. He's interviewed by Charlie Rose here. Helping, he says, is my religion. Well, that's what God wants. And it doesn't be a religion, but God wants us to be so committed to helping, serving people. And that's what Jack Ma learned. He learned English from the Americans coming over there, because he helped with tourism. And but anyway, it's about moral values. That's the second major cornerstone of God's principles about us to be successful. And so it's about infrastructure in business. In China, it's bad. There's a bad infrastructure. The culture of shame is there. But he focuses on the things that Americans should be talking about, and what godly principles should be. Focus on the customer first, employees number two, and then the stockholder. Not the stockholder first, like too many companies do in the States. We get into calling the greed aspects of growth. But listen to Jack's story here, an interview with Charlie Rose.
I'm pleased to have Jack Ma at this table for the first time. Welcome.
Thanks.
So tell me how you got involved in technology.
Well, actually, till now, I'm still not involved in technology. I'm involved in entrepreneurship, because I was trained to be a high school teacher. I know nothing about technology. Till now, the only thing I can use my computer and send, receive email, and browse. That's it. So I even scared to
use it. You can't write code?
No. Not at all. I always wondering how the code works.
Yeah,
but because I don't know the technology, so I respect the technology. We hire the best people, and understand them, and let them. I believe one thing, that is technology is for the people. We should tell the technology guy what the consumers want, what the people want, because I believe 80% of the people in this world are like me. We love technology, but we're scared of technology. So that's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was it about you and creating these companies?
Well, I started the first internet company in China in 1995 called ChinaPages.com. Just by accident, I came to the States. I found the internet. I said, wow, this something is going to change the world. So I started the business.
You knew it was going to change the world when you saw it.
Yeah. I think this thing is going to be huge. But I honestly, I did not know after 15 years that growth that fast. Yeah. And I worked for myself for 3 years and competed with China Telecom, the SOEs, you know, state-owned companies. And then I started failed and then joined government for 14 months and then start Alibaba. To today, I think what we want to do, the business is that when I was entrepreneur, small, tiny business, nobody helped us. So when we grow, we say, well, China needs a lot of jobs. China needs a lot of small, medium-sized. China needs a lot of entrepreneurs. And what the best way to help them? Internet. So then we focus on helping the others. And because we help more people and then more people help us, then the business really grows.
You are an apostle for small business.
I'm a strong believer. It's my religion, helping small.
It is your religion.
It's my religion. You know, if I think it's a great honor for us that we are born in this stage doing internet, and we suddenly realize we can help so many people, and especially SMEs, it's all about a family. It's all about a family hope. It's all about a family dream. So, you know, I think I'm very honored that it's just a great honor of this life that you can influence so many families just by using the technology and grow.
Where is Alibaba going?
Still focus on e-commerce, still focus on SME and consumer market, and I think we become the infrastructure of China e-commerce. You know, e-commerce in the States is a dessert, but in China it's become a main course. because the infrastructure of doing business in China is so bad, but infrastructure of doing business in the States is so good. So, you know, it is very difficult for a pure e-commerce company to grow that big in the States. But in China, because just like mobile phones, 10, 15 years ago, the infrastructure of telecommunication was so bad, and the mobile phone bang in China. Today, e-commerce, same thing. So I think there's... the best game in this world is helping SME to make money through the commerce.
What do you think your core competence is?
It's culture. It's not the technology. I think technology is a tool. The core competence of our companies, we have 20,000. We grow from 18 people to now 20,000 young people. And we focus a lot on the value and the mission and making sure the culture, everybody work for helping others instead of you know, just making money. Mm-hmm. And we believe the core competence, different from the Wall Street, we believe customer number one, employee number two, shareholder number three.
Customer one, employee two, shareholder number three.
Yeah, this is my religion. And, you know, it's the customer that pays us the money. It's the employees that drive the innovation. It's the shareholder, and the shareholder always say, you know, I remember the day before we IPO, and a lot of people say, Jack, can I keep up the shares? We were long-term shareholders. But when the crisis came, these guys run as soon as, you know,
they ran away.
My people stayed. Custom state.
Yeah. So where you've got a world market now. I mean, you've got traction, big time traction. Mm-hmm. You can look at the world and say, what we do in China, we can do anywhere.
Well,
or not.
Well, yes and no. I think we would say we're not. We would do in China. Where there's a SME, small medium sized business, will be everywhere. I think if their world has SMEs,
right.
And I'm a strong believer small is beautiful in this century. Last century, big size, big skill.
So the 21st century, small is beautiful.
Small is beautiful. So we believe as long as any nation, anywhere, you have a small, medium-sized business, we'll be there.
Now, are there people here trying to create, do you see people in the United States trying to follow your model and do what you're doing?
They try it, but not successful.
Why is that?
I think U.S. is still big company driven. You know, the 10 years ago, the e-commerce in the Western part is focused on big company, focused on buyers, focusing on cut the cost.
Right.
But in China, we do is that we focus on small, medium-sized companies. We focus on supplies. And I think you don't have to teach the SME how to save the cost because they know better than you do.
Yeah.
We will help them to sell things. But USA... we have over 2 million registered users, small, medium-sized individual users in the States right now.
I don't know that this is an analogy or not, but Sam Walton at Walmart focused on small towns. He built Walmart by serving people in small towns, not by coming to Manhattan or Boston or Chicago or Los Angeles.
I agree with that. I think I've seen people make a fortune by catching shrimps. but I never seen people make a fortune by catching sharks and whales, right? It's like Forrest Gump told me, right? You shrimp this or shrimp that, and you have a simple dream and making sure people love
that. Yeah. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Is that good? I love that. Catching shrimp versus whales and sharks and that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's a lot bigger. They're a lot bigger fish, hard to haul in, all that kind of stuff, right? So deal with small. I never heard that term before. He still started SME, which means small, medium-sized enterprises. And that is the market. That's the largest market. The small business is what employs 60-70% of all the people in America, but everybody focuses on big corporations, okay? So, and it's all about the money. And he said, no, it's not about the money. It's first the customer, then the employees, the stockholders. They come and go, right? They invest when you're doing great and they leave when you're not. So great analogy. The guy's full of all kinds of wisdom, really moral values. You know, the way he's doing it is he's got a lot of biblical principles involved in the way he thinks. Pretty neat. Now, here's a guy who's a young guy, Doug McMillan. He's only in his 40 some years old, and he is new to Walmart as the CEO in the last 5 years, and he's been very innovative. He had to be, because Walmart could easily lose some of his lunch to Amazon, right? Trying to steal its market share. And so what do? They have store pickup now. They didn't have before. They beefed up their website to compete more strongly with Amazon. So the guy's been very innovative, but the guy's also a dedicated Christian young man. And listen to some of the things he says. Now, this, we've got actually four little clips here we pieced together, but they're his point of view about biblical principles and interacting with business and ministry. Listen into what he has to say.
For me personally, one of the things that's important is that I start out each day grounded and find time, even some mornings it's a little bit of time, to read a verse, to pray a prayer, and get myself centered. Sometimes that happens in the kitchen while I'm having a bowl of cereal. Sometimes it happens in the car on the way to work. But remembering to do that helps set the day off on the right foundation, and then gives me a chance to calibrate correctly throughout the day. Getting that reset every morning is, for me personally, vital. Sometimes people ask me what my life verse is, my life Bible verse, and the reality is I don't really have one. I kind of have seasons where I focus on something, like from Matthew 8 and the story of the faith of the centurion, or most recently Mark 12:30, which is also in Luke, the greatest commandment. We are to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, all of our soul, all of our mind, and all of our strength. And secondly, love others as we love ourselves. I think the grounding of that message simplifies everything and helps keep me focused. So starting the morning in a grounded fashion is important. And then throughout the day, finding those moments in time to reconnect, particularly if I'm headed into a meeting or in a situation of some sort where I really need good judgment, stopping to pray down the hallway on the way to a meeting, or pausing before I walk through that door to pray for wisdom or good judgment, check my emotions, and walk in that door refreshed and ready to go, even if it's at the end of the day, is one of the things that goes through my mind. And I had a friend once tell me about his process, and he thinks of himself as carrying a cup at times when he's walking into a meeting. Sometimes we may have a dozen meetings in a day or more on different subjects. And you have to pivot from one to the other and be ready to contribute on a new subject. And the way he describes that cup is, before he walks into the meeting, it's full of whatever's happened during that day and the thoughts that are on his mind. And he'll mentally take it and pour it out and walk into that next meeting with an empty cup. And I've always loved that analogy and try to practice that myself and occasionally get it done. Worship is knowing who God is and responding appropriately. And that shouldn't happen just on a Sunday morning. It should happen every day. And so I think that idea of praying in a constant manner, an unceasing manner, and having that connection is the right idea. You should be yourself at work just like you are at home and everywhere else. And so if you're a person of faith, it only makes sense that you should exhibit characteristics consistent with your faith, and when and where appropriate, talk about your faith so that people know who you are. Individuals at work should express who they are. We want the whole person to be there. That's the best way to improve the performance of the company. In my case, it happens to include my faith, and I don't always get it done. Interruptions and distractions and bad days and things happen for sure. But I feel most rewarded and fulfilled in my work when that connection has been stronger, regardless of the hour or the day of the week. One of the questions I get asked a lot is about life balance or work-life balance, and no doubt it's a challenge for everybody. Everybody that I've ever met that's pursuing a career has got that kind of rebalancing that we go through from time to try and get it right. And I think your spirit and your faith are obviously a very important part of that equation. You know, your health, all of those things, those dimensions of who we are as people need to be factored in to that equation. In my case, it's a real priority to me to have a strong relationship with my family. And I've not been perfect in that area, but I've learned over the years that it's important for me all the time to be pursuing my spouse, to be courting her. If you don't, you can get off track. And to be pursuing my children and have strong relationships there. And those were priorities to me. And Walmart, my career, fulfilled a lot of other things that I wanted. Competition, teamwork, those kinds of professional things that I was pursuing. And I didn't need a lot more. You know, my family and my career have been important to me along with my faith. And being intentional and deliberate is an important part of balancing your life, an important part of being who you want to be. And deliberately, choicefully, giving things up that aren't as important to you is something that all of us need to be thinking about. If you don't, you'll get distracted, spread too thin, what's most important will suffer, and you look up at some point and regret how you've invested yourself. For anyone, I think what you're in pursuit of is, what's the right mix for me? What are the things that are most important to me? What are the priorities that I have? And you'll get off track just like I do and like everybody else does. And every once in a while, I need to rebalance, stop, and think about, how am I allocating my time? What am I pursuing? What am I thinking about? So that when you look back in time, you feel good about the balance that you created in your life. One of the ideas that can sometimes help with focus is this idea that someday we're going to retire. Someday we're going to have our last day in our company, in our business, in my case at Walmart. And when I imagine that day, I then think about, what do I want people to say? What do we want to have accomplished during that period of time? I think leaving the company in an even stronger position from a cultural point of view, how our people feel about the business, how they care about the business, how they behave to generate results within the company, that's an area of focus. I would like for our culture to be stronger on that day than it is even today. And also have positioned the company to win. So make sure that today's decisions, today's investments, result in an opportunity to win with our customers in the future, to perpetuate the business, to create job opportunities for all of our associates, and to serve customers in a way that we can have fulfilled our purpose. Technology is changing the world, competition is different, there are so many things happening in today's environment, and they're happening fast and frequently material to the environment in which we operate. And so one of the things I'm focused on is positioning Walmart so that it's here 50 years from now. We're a little over 50 years old now, and 50 years goes by pretty quickly, and there are a lot of people working for our company, and I really want them to have a future and have another 50 years of Walmart. And in my case, I would like to be known as a person of faith in Jesus Christ. I would like to be known as a great father, as a great husband, someone who made a difference. And we get different platforms in life to use to try and make that difference. In my case, being part of Walmart has been a platform, but it's not the only one. So it's my hope that when it's all said and done, people know what I stood for, they knew who I was, and they feel like that I made the place a little bit better because I was here.
Doug McMillon, young guy, but he's the CEO of Walmart. Incredible story, how he's risen to fame and success, but he hasn't lost his Christian values and heritage. You know, the great testimonies there, great commitment. Here's a story, interview was on Fox Business with Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, and his son Dan Cathy. I had a chance to interview both of them, meet them both personally, take a wise counsel group there to their headquarters one time, but more interviews on our website as well. But listen into their interview here on Fox Business News. Listen in.
Chick-fil-A is seeing its 42nd consecutive year of growth.
And the company continues to expand its chain throughout the country. Joining us now with their recipe for success, especially during these tough times, in an exclusive interview, a father and son behind Chick-fil-A, Truett and Dan Cathy. Good to see you both. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be with you, and it's not very often that we are seen in the same place together, so it's a lot of fun for me as well.
Well, yeah. you can bet that Fox Business gets the full story here, and when I say full, I wish you could see the spread that your folks have brought here so that we could show people what you offer and how it is that you've managed Truett to have 42 consecutive years of growth. Give us like that single piece of success for all the entrepreneurs and business people watching.
Oh my goodness, what'd you say, Dad?
Go ahead.
I know that I've heard Dad answer this question a lot of times, and I think he, and certainly I would agree, it really gets down to people. The quality and the caliber of your people. We fortunately, in our Chick-fil-A restaurant operations, we offer a financial deal as a Chick-fil-A restaurant operator that attracts thousands of people that are interested, and the high caliber of Chick-fil-A leadership that we see in our Chick-fil-A restaurant operators produces high caliber young people who work with us, and that makes the food taste even better. So it really all gets down to people and the values and the principles that underline the business.
Well, I had to drag these people kicking and screaming, I got to tell you, because they are very humble. But again, the customer service, and we have three representatives. I don't know if you can see them there, guys. Okay. Three representatives of your organization. Customer service is so important. Just this morning, you know, I'm not bad-mouthing anybody in particular, but I went to a coffee place that begins with a letter S. Maybe you'll guess which one. And they were rude to me. And they were rude to the people before me and rude to the people after me. You don't countenance any of that at your organization, do you?
Well, David, I found, you know, that, and we've known Dad's tutored us in this all these years, is it's not just about the food, but it's really actually more about really the service. Ben Franklin said that the handshake of the host affects the taste of the roast. And David, well, you like to be treated with honor, dignity, and respect, and Liz as well. In fact, everybody deserves to be treated with honor, dignity, and respect. And so we've kind of built that into our whole philosophy. We call it second mile service. And it's based on a biblical principle. Matthew chapter 5, verse 41, Jesus said, if someone asks you to go 1 mile, go within the second mile. So it's what we call second mile service.
I'm trying to get my daughter to do that with homework.
Dan, good luck.
Dan, I'd love to hear your perspective on founding this company and running it all these years. You constantly have to be malleable and change when the winds change, and we have seen a very cold wind come in last September, a year ago. What did you do when you saw this happening? Obviously, you were remembering the Depression, but when you saw this recession starting, did you mass the troops and say, we've got to change the menu? What did you do to make sure that you didn't go under during these times?
Well, fortunately, we had enough cushion financially in our business, and one of the great advantages of being a very low-debt company. In fact, we're about to be a no-debt company here in the next 36 months, and it's through Dad's encouragement. Gave us a lot of cushion. We really didn't have to change our game plan. We took some safety measures as we went into 2009. But we've continued, very fortunate that we've continued to see sales increases. We'll have about a 9% sales increase this year, and within just a couple of weeks, we will, for the first time ever, hit $3 billion in sales. But I think it's a testament to our restaurant operators and people that just love great food, but they love the great service that goes on as well, despite the economy. People still like to be treated with honor, dignity, and respect.
You know, yeah. we have a guy here on Fox Business named Dave Ramsey who would applaud you, give you a standing applause for trying to go without debt. That's one of his bugaboos, and we here at Fox agree.
We know that. Dave's a great guy. Dad, you were going to comment?
Go ahead, Truett.
Well, I was thinking about, we hear you
train our people, just treat your customers like you like to be treated. When you go out to eat, you like to be greeted with a bunch of smiling faces, demonstrate a serving spirit, and if a customer happens to say thank you, we say my pleasure. So it distinguishes us. We can meet our highest competition simply because of the quality of our people and the kindness of our people. And so people go out to eat quality food, but also the kindness and the service. And we say courtesy is very cheap, but pays great dividends for us.
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
You know what? Courtesy is very cheap.
That's right. I wonder where that comes from.
Brilliant. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming
on. Thank you.
We'd like to find out.
Remember, got something there.
Eat more chicken.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of which,
that's a brilliant campaign.
A brilliant ad campaign.
If you eat Chick-fil-A, you, my friend.
So cute. Well, they're rarely together, father and son, Truett and Dan. We appreciate you.
I got to ask, before you guys go, who came up with that idea of getting the cow to talk about eating more chicken?
Well, as a lot of folks like to take credit for it, but the Richards Group in Dallas, Texas, came up with that campaign, and it's been a great winner for us, and we're going to milk it till the cows come home.
Milk it till the cows come home. Again, that's Dan Cathy and Truett Cathy. Truett passed away just a couple of years ago, and I think Dan's maybe stepped down as CEO right now too, but they're doing phenomenal, growing. $5,000 to be a franchise holder. Can you believe it? That's all there is to it, except you got to be partners with them as well. But phenomenal story. We talk about business by the Spirit today. God's worked through all kinds of people. You don't want to be committed to Him to be successful in business, but it sure does make a difference in you and your employees and everyone you serve. So God bless you. Thanks for joining us. John Beaner with Inspiration 316.
Thanks for listening to the Inspiration 316 show with John Beaner. Join us each weekday at the same time. If you want to share your testimony, listen to past shows, or get a free book, visit us at our website, www.inspiration316.com.
Thank you for joining us for Inspiration 316 and John Beaner. Coming up next, it's First Baptist Church of downtown Jacksonville here on listener-supported WTRJ, The Truth.
How do you feel your life? What makes your life really worthwhile? Is it family? Maybe getting away from family. Partying? Getting more stuff? It takes more than this to give life meaning. It takes true grace for real life. Discover living a life of true grace and joy by joining us every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock for Grace Matters, right here on The Truth, brought to you by the Downtown First Presbyterian Church on the corner of Ocean and Monroe.
Here's what's coming up on I Work For Him. Together on Tuesdays in I Work For Him, Martha and I tackle the stories and what we can learn from the couples of the Bible. What can we learn about marriage and family from Adam and Eve, Abraham and Sarah, and Mary and Joseph? Tune in to find out. Connecting what we hear on Sunday with what we do in our 9-to-5, because the eternity of millions is at stake. Tune into I Work For Him every weekday at 2 p.m. on The Truth at FM 91.7 and Talk 100.3 FM at 5 p.m. or anytime access at iworkforhim.com.
WTRJ, Orange Park, Jacksonville. WAYL, St. Augustine. WATY, Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Tesla CEO Elon Musk's surprising proposal to take the electric car maker private has prompted regulators to suspend trading in the company's stock. The unusual step taken early this afternoon came shortly after Musk dropped a bombshell on his Twitter account by announcing he had lined up the financing to buy all of Twitter's stock at $420 per share. That would cost about $70 billion, making it one of the biggest buyouts in U.S. history. A Northern California school district is delaying the start of school because of smoke damage from a wildfire that's now the largest in state history. The Lakeport Unified School District was scheduled to begin tomorrow, but the Superintendent Secretary Tammy Carley said classrooms need to be cleared of all the smoke before students can safely return. Strong session on Wall Street with the Dow up 126 points. The closing bell. This is SRN News.
Near downtown, there's an accident on the Matthews Bridge that's blocking all the eastbound lanes. Be aware of that. You might have to use another bridge. Also, another accident on the West Beltway 295 northbound at the Buckman Bridge could slow you down. And they're still clearing that accident in Clay County on Blanding Boulevard southbound at Fox Ridge Road, blocking the left lane. Plenty of sun this afternoon, mostly clear tonight, low 75. Wednesday, mostly sunny, high 94.
But Hebrews is not fundamentally framed around the warning passages. It's fundamentally framed